This is the Emergency Medical Minute, sponsored by Mile High Ambulance.
Today we're going to talk about DKA. DKA is something we see pretty regularly, or acute hyperglycemic states. So the two big ones that we think about are DKA and HHS. So the first part of understanding how to manage these and why we're doing what we're doing is understanding the underlying physiology of why it happens. So as far as DKA, why does it happen? Pretty much like three pieces, right? So one is a decrease of circulating insulin or insulin resistance. So that to decrease then causes increased gluconeogenesis and increased breakdown of fatty acids, as well as increase in cortisol levels and catecholamine levels. All of that then brings you to a point where you start having ketone production, right? So the liver then starts to break down free fatty acids. The free fatty acids are then what are used to metabolize because your body's unable to use the insulin that's there, or there's not enough insulin there. Then that can cause elevated sugars, which then causes diuresis, right? You know, because sugar is an osmotic agent, that diuresis then can cause the downstream effects of electrolyte-related abnormalities, and then significant acidosis that goes with this. So when you think about it, the spectrum of DKA versus HHS, you want to think about it, one, in the sense of why does a person get HHS versus DKA, right? So in HHS, you still have enough circulating insulin around or not significant enough resistance that you are still able to process, the insulin is actually still working. So what you end up seeing is just a really significant hyperglycemic state, but then a significant diuresis, right? And so these folks are severely, severely dehydrated, but you won't see the ketosis that you see in a DKA. So with these patients, you may see sugars in the thousands, right? And these are folks that can also come in obtunded because of that, and then just severely dry. The patients with DKA are severely dry, but then they also have this severe acidosis. As far as symptoms that you'll see clinically, right, you may see a person who's tachycardic, they're dry mucous membranes, they may be altered, they may be significantly weak. And then there's a breathing phenomenon that you see too. And what do we call that? Do you guys know? Yeah, what is that? And why are they doing that? Yeah, so they are trying to keep up, and their body's response to that is by trying to blow off CO2. So these folks, you know, while their pHs may be significantly low, they are compensating, or at least attempting to compensate, with that respiratory piece. So what do we want to do with these patients when they come in? Hydration is key. And so that we'll start with that. So hydration, you know, there's always this debate, or there's been a debate over the last 10 years of what do you hydrate them with, right? There was a question of, do you give them hypertonic, isotonic solution, or a hypotonic type solution, right? And so there was lots of studies that show hypertonic solution is definitely not the answer, right? There's downstream mortality issues that come with that. And then the question is, okay, well, what about normal saline versus LR versus plasmolite, right? And so what they found was no significant difference, although in a few studies, LR shows decrease issues with hypernatremia afterwards, and then other electrolyte related issues. And so my go-to when I'm going to be giving folks large amounts of fluid, especially in DKA and HHS, is I'm going to be giving them LR. The endocrine groups, right, Society of Endocrinology, actually recommends LR right now, but there's still no full consensus on which one. So then after working on volume, what are the other things we want to consider and be worried about? So if you're drawing labs, what are the labs you're super interested in seeing? Potassium. What else? So anion gap. What's the cause, right? So is the underlying cause infection? Is it medication? Is it some kind of acute illness? Is it not using your meds, right? And then laboratory evaluation, which your anion gap is going to differentiate what exactly is going on. Potassium, phosphorus, magnesium, those are all three things that we're going to also look at. Kidney function is also really important, right? So if they have severe kidney dysfunction, be really, really careful as far as what you're going to do as far as the insulin goes. Okay, so now we've gotten labs. We are resuscitating with volume. So then what? So it used to be that we wanted to bolus these folks with insulin, right? And so that was the go-to. You bolus, and then you start them on a drip. We found that there's actually increase in morbidity and downstream effects of bolusing them, right? Which is episodes of hypoglycemia. So we'll just start these folks on a drip, and it's usually 0.1 units per kg of insulin, or 0.14 units per kg of insulin if you're going to be a little bit more aggressive in the early piece. But you never want to start your insulin until you get your potassium back, right? So you can just volume resuscitate these peeps with 2, 3, 4 liters. HHS can be 5, 6 probably liters of fluid. And then once you get your potassium back, as long as your potassium is not below 4.5, it's between 4.2 and 4.5, you can just start them on the insulin. But if it is low, you're going to want to start them with some potassium first, and then you can start the insulin. So while insulin is important, you don't need to, it's not like you don't have to do that in the first 10 seconds, right? You want to be methodical in this process. And then as far as their other electrolytes, you might see a hyponatremia, and I'll be like, wow, that sodium's low. Why does sodium look low? Sodium, it looks low because your sugars are high, so there's a pseudo hyponatremia, right? So you actually can correct for this. So even though their sodium looks low, it's not actually low. Their real sodium is actually normal. A lot of these folks will actually end up hypernatremic after you resuscitate them. And then the other piece on this is, what about their bicarbs? So if their bicarb's 4, do we give them bicarb? No. So there's, the evidence on this shows that, if their pH is greater than 6.9, there's really no benefit to administering bicarb in that early phase. Doesn't really do much to help them, doesn't really improve outcomes in terms of long-term outcomes, and doesn't decrease morbidity or mortality. So while it's, the number looks low and scary, as long as their pH, so VBG was also one thing in the lab group that we want to do, as long as their pH looks okay, then by okay, I mean greater than 6.9, you don't need to worry about bicarb. So the last piece on this is their breathing, right? So these guys are going to look like they're, breathing really fast. You do not want to intubate them, right? They are compensating. So the moment you intubate them is the moment that they crash, because you're not able to keep up with the rate that they were going at. So in general, the biggest things, DK versus HHS, knowing which labs, which includes VBG, lactate, or CMP, and a urine, right? The urine's important. So I want, you got to be getting urine right away on these folks, whether it be just a straight cath and getting it done, or whatnot. Starting them on aggressive IV fluids, making sure their potassium looks good. And as long as their potassium looks good, then you can start them on an insulin drip. And then knowing that airway, while they look like they're having difficulty, they're actually helping themselves compensate.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Health One Continental Division, and Swedish Medical Center for their financial contributions to the EMM. Donations from them and listeners like you make it possible for us to fulfill our mission of producing and spreading free medical education to the masses. If you enjoy our show, please consider making a one-time or recurring donation to help cover our operational costs and keep the EMM awesome. Click on the link in our show notes to make a donation. Thank you for listening.